I'm very glad to see that this works, as this is obviously an Apple laptop. It works fine. You don't have to adjust it. macOS 10 is just beautiful.
Okay. Can you hear me? Yeah. Okay. So, hello everybody. So the subject of my talk is going to be about Windows Network Services, and more precisely, I would like to talk about specificities of the implementation of the SMB SIFS protocols and MSRPC also. So, the agenda for today, I have 42 slides exactly, so I will have to go quickly, but I have many screenshots, so. I will first talk about how SMB SIFS is implemented in Windows systems, and then I will talk about MSRPC, or more precisely, MSRPC over SMB using name pipes. And then I will briefly talk about network authentication, how you can configure security auditing on servers on domain controllers to diagnose or debug authentication problems. And then a last section about interesting tools that I would like to mention that can be very interesting to debug Windows-related problems. So the SMB SIFS architecture in Windows systems, it is implemented in kernel modes. So the client side of SMB, it's called the redirector. So it's implemented in drivers. Before Windows 2000, it's the rdr.sys driver. And starting with Windows 2000, there was a redesign of the redirector architecture. So it's a MRX SMB.sys driver. So this is for the client side. And for the server side, it is also in kernel mode. So it's different from Samba, which is implemented in user mode. It's srv.sys. So this is the kernel mode components, and you only have two user mode services that only configure the driver, but in fact they don't really do anything useful. So it's LANMAN server on LANMAN workstation. So I will directly dig into the technical details. So I first would like to talk about the SMB SIFS transport. So you probably know that starting with Windows 2000, you can transport SMB directly into TCP using port 445. So, and also, of course, with NetBT in port 139. So in both cases, this is one driver which takes care of this traffic. It's so the NetBIOS over TCP IP driver, netbt.sys. And what does this driver do? It first opens the SMB-related ports, so for NetBIOS, so 137, 38, 39, and also 445, starting with Windows 2000. So these ports are open in kernel mode because it's a driver. Another interesting thing to know is that NetBT is implemented as a it's bound to each network adapter, so it's explained here, whereas the raw SMB is only one unique device, so it will have some consequences that I will explain in two slides. So this is documented in a MS Microsoft Knowledge Base article, and if you want to disable the global transport of 445 without disabling the netbios.sys netbios over tcpip .sys driver, you can set a registry value which is called smb device enable to 0 to disable this global device but won't disable netbios over tcpip. So I first would like to show this tool. This is a like most of the tools I demonstrate today from the SIS internals website. So TCP view is basically a netstat, a graphical netstat, but it has the interesting properties of showing the process which has opened a given port, just like LSOF in Unix. So because before Windows XP, you don't have any option in netstat to do this. So here we see that all the SMB related ports are opened by the system. It represents the kernel, in fact. So there is no dedicated, the dedicated PID is 8. So, and you can see that the port 445 is bound to all network interfaces, whereas the NetBIOS for TCP IP is bound only to, as I said, each network adapter. So you can see that if you look at the NetSat output. Another thing to know is that with Windows 2000, if Windows 2000 can use raw SMB, it will prefer to use it over the NetBT transport. So this is a simple network capture that shows that when a window, this is one Windows 1000 client trying to connect to a Windows 1000 server. So the two first frames shows the beginning of an establishment of a TCP connection. Microsoft DS is 445 and NetBIOS session is 139. So it tries at the same time establishing two TCP connections on these two ports. And if the port 445 responds, so you see a SENAC here, it will reset, this is the frame here, it will reset the connection that was going to be established on port 139. So it will continue using 4445. Okay, for the transport configuration, in the UI you have in each network adapter properties. For the server side, you have a component which is named file and return sharing for Microsoft networks. And for the redirector, you have client for Microsoft networks. And for NetBIOS, which is used by both server and redirector, you have in the properties of TCP/IP enable NetBIOS for TCP/IP. You can see in CLI with these two commands netconfig.sav and netconfig.adr which transports are configured. And a direct consequence of the fact that the SMB device is a global one is that even if you disable a client for Microsoft networks on a network adapter, this network adapter will still be able to establish SMB communication on port 445. So the only method to disable this is to either disable the NetBT driver or, as I said earlier, to set the SMB device enable registry value to zero. So these are examples of the netconfig commands. So netconfig RDR for the client-side part. So the NetBIOS SMB is a global device for 445. And NetBT TCP/IP on the GUID of the network adapter. So I had only one network adapter on this machine, so there is only one line. But if you have multiple network adapter, you would have another line. And it's exactly the same for the SRV port. And of course, you probably know NBT stats to list registered NetBIOS name. And you see the two NetBIOS name for the client side, for the redirector 00, and for the server side 20. Okay, what is the typical method to establish an SMB session on a Windows system? It is to use the netuse command. It is to create what's called a use record. So these are different examples of using the netuse command. The first one is to mount a typical file share. So netuse UNT name is the UNT name of the server, and share is the share name. If you don't specify credential, it will try to use, it will use your cache credential. I will explain this a bit later. You can specify alternate credential with the /u option, specifying a username, and the star here, and the star at the end of the command line mentions that it will ask you for your password. And you can also establish what's called a null session, specifying, in fact, a null username and a null password. So this is, and if you issue the netuse command, this will only enumerate your current use records. It is important to remember that it will only enumerate use records in your current login session. So you will only see your use records, and not all the use records that can have been established by other users of the machine. And the SMB session can go up and down independently of the use record. So, for example, an SMB session can be disconnected because it's idle. But the next time you try to access to a file which is in a use record, the SMB session will be transparently reestablished. Okay, so just a few examples of the netuse command. So the first one is mapping a drive letter to the D$ administrative share. The second one is using a null session to the IPC $ share. And so then with netuse, you can see that the two sessions have been established. The status is OK here. And on the server side, you can use the net session commands to see the session which have been established. So this is a null session because the username is empty. And this is a session established with JBM credential. Okay, the LSA credential cache. The LSA is the system components that takes care of security on the local Windows system. So there is a cache of the two hashes, LM and NT hashes. So the first time you authenticate on a Windows workstation, the password you give will be cached in your login session, and then it will be used to establish SMB session to authenticate. Sorry. So this is used in particular by what's called the MSV1, which is in fact the authentication package which does NTLM in Windows systems. It is also used by Kerberos once a TGT, a ticket granting ticket, has expired and cannot be renewable. So with it, you can have a transparent or seamless network authentication. But as we've seen earlier, you can specify alternate credential with the statue option. There is also a session cache at the redirector level. So established sessions are seamlessly used. What does it mean? When you are using a remote administration tool like the registry editor or the services manager, and you connect to a remote machine, so we are going to see that it uses RPC over SMB. And when the machine needs to have an SMB session to a remote machine, it will first look up in the cache to see if another session has been established. So, and it will reuse any sessions it can find in the cache. So, for example, for remote administration tool, which use SMB session to the IPC $ share, an administration trick can be to establish manually with netuse an SMB session with administrator credential. And then once this session has been established, all the remote administration tool you will use on this remote machine will use the session you've established. Another thing to know is that internally, the cache is a session inside the cache is uniquely identified by three elements. On the client side, you have the login session ID and the network address, source network address. And on the server side, you have the server name. And to be able to establish multiple SMB sessions to the same server, you will need to use a different server name, because you have to introduce something that can distinguish different sessions. So one trick can be to use, for one session you can use a NetBIOS name, and for the other one you can use the IP address, and for the third one you can use the DNS name. And playing with this trick, you can establish multiple sessions inside one login session. So this is what I demonstrate here. So the first line is establishing an SMB session to the IPCDRA with JBN credential. And then if I try to establish a second session with an null session, I will have this error.
Excuse me, as probably after the third line nobody is able to read, let me just restate, it's all available on the website currently because he sent in the stuff early. So if you look at the website, you can always read that from there. Yeah. One? Okay, we have to fix that, but it will be available.
Okay, but I will give the full PDF. Okay, so the trick is to, you see here, I use the DNS name to establish a second session. And then I've been able, so this is the same machine, one time this is the IP address and the second one is the DNS name. And it was on the same machine, so using net session I can see that you see exactly the same IP address. Okay, for the administration of the file server, so you have the famous net command on Windows system. So for share management, you can use net shares. So net shares will list the shares configured. You can add, you can remove. Net session, as we've seen, will display a list of established SMB sessions on the server. And you can close any session using the /delete word. And you can, inside the session, you can see which files are open using net files. And you can also close a given file using /close. So another example, so I use SMB client to connect to a Windows server. So this is why you have the client type set to Unix. And from the HSC machine, and if I look at who is connected to the share, to the IPCDRA share, you can see here JBM. And then with SMB client, I just issue the command open backslash pipe backslash event log. So it used the SMB command to open this name pipe. So this is why with netfiles I can see this file open. And using the ID here, I can just close this file. And then I can finally delete the session using netsession slash delete. Okay, the second part of my talk is about MSRPC. Yes, sorry.
So I was just going to ask, can you use the net files to query a remote server for what files it
No, I don't think so.
Sorry, could you just repeat the question?
Yeah. The question was, is it possible to close a remote file on a remote server using netfiles? I don't think so, but we can just check using netfiles slash. So we can just try that. I don't think so, no. I think it's only local. So MSRPC, so it's just a Microsoft implementation of standards of the DC-RPC standards. So as said, is Luke Kenneth Kesson Layton book. It's used in all versions of Windows NT at all levels. So the typical use are for the working of Windows NT domains, NT4 domains, for remote administration on DCOM is also carried into MSRPC. So the DC-RPC standard is independent of the transport of the protocol, of the transport protocols. So it can be TCP/IP, IPX, SPX. And Microsoft has added an SMB transport. So using name pipes as DC-RPC endpoints. Just like in TCP/IP, DC-RPC endpoints are UDP or TCP ports with the SMB transport. the endpoints are just name pipes. So these name pipes all belong to the IPC dollar shell. And the DC-RPC protocol data unit PDUs are just sent over name pipes using a specific subset of SMB commands. So in Windows systems, name pipes are just another method to do inter-process communication. But it can be either used locally or remotely, and in that case, it uses SMB. So internally, it's implemented by a file system driver, so it's npfs.sys. And there is a name pipe enumeration tool that you can use to see which name pipes are open on your Windows system. This tool can only work locally, and you cannot make it work remotely. So this is an example of the pipe list command on a typical Windows 2000 machine. Of course, the name of pipes that you will see depends on the services you are running. And on a Windows XP system, you will see different name pipes. This is because, in fact, in the MPFS driver, there is a notion of aliases. So, yes, because if you look carefully on the Windows 2000 output of pipe list, you will see that probably some name pipes that you know are missing. For example, the netlogon pipe name pipe is missing. So in fact, this is because the name pipe file system has the notion of aliases. So in fact, these name pipes that you probably know, netlogon, lsa-rpc, same-or, are just implemented as aliases of the lsa-ss pipe. And the other typical name pipes like SRV, SVC, event log, browse are in fact aliases of the NTSVCS pipe. So this is why these name pipes do not appear in the output of the pipe list command. And if you wonder, the pipe landman, which is used by RIP calls, it's not a real name pipe. It does not exist in the NPFS namespace. So it just exists in the SMB driver. So yes, the name pipe aliases configuration appears in the registry. So it's on a Windows NT system, you need to open the value because it does not decode it properly. So it's on a Windows 2000, on the Windows Server 2003, that is the same in Windows XP. And you can see that and there is only two aliases for NTSVCS on Windows XP and Windows Server 2003, whereas you have multiple aliases in Windows 2000. Okay, the next step then is to ask you in the output of the pipe list, in the output of the pipe list command, which name pipes are really DC-RPC endpoints and which are not. So a trick is to use what's called the remote management interface. So what is an interface in DC-RPC? An interface is just a set of related operations that you can call. So for example, the netlogon interface contains some related function. So the management interface is always implicitly supported by any DC RPC service. So you can use the IDS tool to query this interface. So the trick here is to use this command. So here you specify the transport protocol you are using. So NP just means name pipes. And then you give the pipe name. And then finally, the name of the machine. So using this trick, you can identify which name pipes are really DC-RPC endpoints. So the first line shows that if you try to speak DC-RPC on this name pipe, you will receive an error because, in fact, it's not a DC-RPC server which has opened this pipe. But if you look at typical name pipes, so the spooling subsystem, full FS, the WinReg for remote registry service, and the endpoint mapper, you will see that you will see as a result the identification of interfaces that are supported on this endpoint. A last thing to know is that inside a given process, all RPC services that exist can be accessed using any endpoints on any transport. And this has a direct consequence because you may know that Windows services, which are the equivalent of Unix daemons, non-interactive processes, most of typical Windows services are implemented in shared processes. So typically in services.exe or svcos.exe, you have 10 or 15 services running inside a single process. So this is why on some name pipes, if you ask with IFIDS the list of supported interface, you will see a big list of interface identifiers. So this is just an example. To make this demonstration, I had first determined that the pipe NTSVCS is typically opened by the services by a service inside the services.exe process. So asking for the list of supported interface, I received 10 interfaces supported. And using the TCP view tool I've shown earlier, I had also determined that the port 1027 in UDP had also been opened by the services.exe by the same process. So if you ask either using name pipes or using UDP, you receive exactly the same list of interfaces. Okay, that's all for MSRPC. And then I just would like to talk about network authentication. So SMB sessions are typically authenticated, except if you use null sessions. So the two main network authentication protocols are NTLM and Kerberos. And how does it work? In fact, when a server authenticates a client, the local machine is going to create what's called a network logon session, as opposed to an interactive logon session. And a network logon session is going to be created on the server. And then the idea is that, as we said earlier, that the SRV.sys driver is responsible for implementing the server side of SMB. This driver is going to create a new thread inside the kernel to service the request of the client. And from the security point of view, it's going to create what's called a token, because a token is what defines the security context of a client inside the NT system. So it's going to affect to the thread what's called an impersonation token. And with this trick, you are sure that all accesses made by the thread with servicing the request will run in the correct security context, because the token represents the user which has been authenticated. So one thing that can be very useful to debug authentication problems is to enable security auditing. So by default on a Windows 2000 server, you have no security auditing, so it must be manually enabled. So on the server side, you have to enable the auditing logon events category. And then once you've enabled this category, you are going to see some new events in your security event log. So before Windows 2000, there was no dedicated event for network logon session, network authentication. So it was only one single event, 428. And you have to know that a network logon session is the logon type is set to free, so you have to look at the value of the logon type field to determine whether it's an interactive session or a network logon session. And starting with Windows 2000, you have a dedicated event, 440. And you have some interesting fields like the username, the domain, the logon type, which is always free, the authentication package, so it will be typically either NTLM or Kerberos. So that gives you which protocol has been used to authenticate the user. Also the workstation name, so it's just a net BIOS name, so it can be easily spoofed. So starting with Windows 2003, you have the source network address, the IP address, and the port, source port. So just two examples of the event 440. So this is the same event, and this is the same tool, because this is the remaining field here. So what you can see is this is the user JBM has been authenticated using Kerberos. The workstation name is empty, apparently. And you have the IP address and the source port. And when you use NTLM, so you have NTLM SSP as a logon process, the NTLM as authentication package. You have the workstation name, which is the NetBIOS name. And you see you have the IP address, but the source port is set to zero. I don't know why. This is a Windows Server 2003 final version. And on a domain controller, you have another auditing category to set. It is audit account logon. So this will audit when a server needs to validate credential of a client. So this is the domain controller which is going to authenticate. So this is particularly interesting for Kerberos. So starting with Windows 2000, you have these security events. 672 to 677, so split in two categories. When a TGT is granted, when a service ticket is granted, and when a service ticket is renewed, and for failures, this one will be typically when the user password is incorrect, so the user can get the first ticket, the TGT. An authentication ticket request failed. All over categories, error categories, and the same for a service ticket. And for NTLM, you only have two events: one for success and one for failure. Okay. So for Kerberos logging, so as I said, do not forget to enable this auditing of this category, audit account logon. And you can also enable more logging using a registry key, which is documented in this knowledge base article. And this will log in the system log and not in the security log. This will log when service tickets are used, not delivered, but used. And for the client side, you have Kerberos tools to manage the Kerberos ticket cache. So KList and KL3 are Microsoft tools in the resource kit that you can download it, download them freely. And TicketView is an open source tool to do exactly the same. Okay, and I just want to finish showing some tools that I like to use on Windows system to dig into internals or debugs problems. So the sysinternals website is one of the reference, it contains reference tool for advanced system administration on internals digging. So you have monitoring tools like FileMon, RegMon, TokenMon, TDIMon, and you also have more administration tools like Process Explorer, which is which can show all processes running on the system, and PS tools, which are interesting remote administration tools on Windows environment. TCP view. So I just want to mention FileMon because it's a very interesting tool when you are diagnosing Windows file system accesses. So it can monitor all kinds of Windows file system accesses, so typically NTFS, but also name pipes, so NPFS on mail slots. So, for example, it can be used to debug permission problems when a user tries to access to a file but does not have the correct permissions. So just an example of what it looks like. So it can also monitor the local redirector accesses. So this is what's shown in the first two lines. This is accesses to the $C share on a remote machine, and then NTFS access on the C drive. And then this is a disconnection, this is a tree disconnect of the $C share. And FIMON is for file systems, and RegMon is for registry accesses. So RegMon can be very useful because first you can log all registry accesses at system boot. So you can set this this functionality, and the next time your system will be rebooted, it will log all accesses to the registry. And you can also use this tool to discover undocumented registry values. So this is a trick I've already used to find out some values. So the trick is to run RegMon and at the same time start a service or a driver with netstart. And you will see which kind of values the driver is reading. So like this, you can discover some undocumented parameters in the registry. And sometimes you have to manually create the parameters key, because if this key does not exist, the driver will not go further, because it tries to read values under the parameters key, but it does not exist. So you have to manually create it, and then you will see queries for the undocumented values. And then I just want to mention the kernel debugger, which is given by you can download it on the Microsoft website. So these are just some useful commands you can use to see how a given driver works. So just an example with the srv.sys driver. So I just use the X command to list the symbols of the driver. And then I set up three breakpoints on the three typical SMB commands, which are called when a SMB session is set up. So for the negotiate, session setup, and a tree connect. And then I use SMB client to connect to my debugging, the machine I was debugging. And the first breakpoint reached was, of course, SRV SMB negotiate. You can see the stack backtrace here. Okay, and then with G, I continue the execution. And the second breakpoint was session setup and request and X. And then the tree connect on X. So if you want to dig into the server driver, you can use this tool. This is quite fun. Okay, and just some references. So the first book is a reference book about Windows internals. So you can compare it to the BSD 4.4 book, the daemon book. This book is very, very, very interesting, and I highly recommend it, because this is with this book that I understood all the Windows security model. And of course, you know the third one and the fourth one, Christopher book. So soon to be published. Okay, so the SIS internals website, Todd Sabin tools. So IFIDS, which is part of the RPC tools package. You also have the pipe ACL tools, which can show you the ACL, the ACL on name pipes. You also have the ACL tools to show you the ACL on the same object, on LSA objects. And if you want to use the spy toolkit, contains these two commands. which are Unix implementation of DCA dump, which is a RPC dump, and IFIDS, and the Kerberos tool, so part of the Windows 2000 resource kit, and TKDU. And then finally, some references about how you can interpret the different security events that I mentioned earlier. Okay, I'm done. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
While we're at talking about tools, do you know of any way of joining a domain programmatically? So I do not have to go to the workstation and fill in the GUI of Microsoft to join the workstation into the domain.
I'm not sure I understood the question. You mean joining a domain?
Yes.
Make a Windows workstation, join a specific domain remotely.
Remotely?
Yes.
I don't know. Sorry.
Only during auto-installation.
The comment was that auto-installation does it.
There's a tool by Microsoft called NetDOM that probably does it. You can use NetDOM on a remote box to say join domain, this and that. Oh. It's in the Microsoft resource kit.
Yeah.
One of them.
Any further questions? This was supposed to be a Samba conference, not a Windows one, but I found it extremely interesting, and it gave me some hints to really look at what Windows is doing down below, and maybe some hints to make Samba work better.
Yes, but I must say that I've understood many, many things in Windows system reading all the work published by the Samba community. So this is in fact, I've started to work on Windows system 2 years ago, and so I come from the Unix world. And I must say that all the references I've quoted have helped me very much to work on Windows system and to create a Windows security course for my company. So.
I just said we wouldn't be bothering with Samba if it weren't for Windows, would we?
Okay, yeah. Thanks a lot for that talk. So I know you have an hour left to go up to your room, just have a talk and whatever you like. And we'd like to see you back in the lobby of the hotel at shortly before 7. Thank you.